as I wait. Heart
Hello,
of God.
Everyone. Welcome to the Growth Group podcast, where we believe that spiritual growth happens better in circles than it does in rows. My name is David Haken, and I'm joined by Jonathan Markham, the pastor of New Life Christian Fellowship here in Pacifica, California, and we record these podcasts to help you get the most out of your small group discussion each week. This week, we're continuing our series in Deuteronomy. We've made it to Deuteronomy chapters 9, 10, and 11. Important chapters, if you think about the structure of Deuteronomy, right before we get into a long section of laws, 12 through 26. I know you can't wait for that. But this has a lot of marked similarities to another important section of Deuteronomy later, 29 to 30. It's exciting. We've arrived. Deuteronomy 9 to 11. Jonathan, I know you've been thinking about this passage for a long time now.
Yes, I prepared the sermon before I went on vacation. So, and we're actually recording this before. But rather than what David said last week and saying I haven't written the sermon yet, I have written what I anticipate being the sermon, but very often God changes things around when I know you
incorporated some stuff from Fuge Camp into your sermon, so yeah. That clearly was probably a little slight tweak to the original manuscript.
Yes, it was. Yeah, the original manuscript didn't
powerful.
Have anything about Fuge Camp, no.
All right, well.
And who knows? Maybe this, although I don't anticipate it, maybe this will be some future stuff in the sermon I actually preach here.
There you go. Well, God likes to change our plans, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But we're going to stick to our plans and read for you our second question. The first question is, again, the close reading of these chapters. So skim them and kind of find what stands out to you. Our second question.
You gave them the skim option again, did you?
I felt I had to. Three chapters is kind of a mouthful, but these are good ones. Second question, delusions of grandeur. For the third time, Moses challenges something that Israel might say, and this is in quotations, in their hearts. Third time he says that. The attention to these internal thought patterns shows God's concern for Israel's hearts. What is the lie Israel might be tempted to embrace after their victory over the nations in the land, and how does God correct this error? Are there any thought patterns, things you say in your heart, God wants to work with you to correct?
This is such a, it, nobody wants to believe this of ourselves, but it is so easy to, when something good happens, to actually think that we did it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Moses has told them repeatedly, look, you know that God delivered Sihon, king of the Amorites, Og, king of Bashan. God delivered them into your hands.
Fascinating how often those two characters will show up in the rest of the biblical narrative.
Right, it
always
is, isn't it?
Always back to those two.
And Og was the one who had the big bed, didn't he?
I think you're right,
He had a big wrought iron bed that was bigger than any bed in the world. I don't know. But yes, they come. But he says, look, God delivered them. God keeps promising to you that he will deliver the nations of the promised land into you. Now, it's so easy for us to sort of to forget that when something good happens, when we get a job or we do something like that,
This
was me. I did good interview. I did this. I did that. I did the other. Now, but underlying that, the recognition that actually it's God that does it. He may enable us to do it, but the power comes from God and God alone. But it's so easy in the smaller things, even if you don't do it in the bigger things, the small things, just to forget. God is working in those things too.
Right. He's always present, active, and working. So as far as how Moses responds to correct this error, he gives us an entire chapter on Israel's sin. So like first in verses 4 and 5 only, it says it's not because you're righteous, it's not because of your righteousness. And then in 6, know therefore the Lord is not giving you this good land because of your righteousness, for you are a stubborn people. And then whole chapter.
Whole chapter. Remember how you made God angry?
Yeah.
And so then, it's always good for us to remember the mistake. I mean, and again, it's good for us to remember the mistakes that we make in order that we may not make them again. Yeah. Not so that we're guilt tripped, not so that we're sort of thinking, oh, I'm so terrible. No, but just say, oh, I made that mistake before. I'm not going to make it again.
Right. And kind of realizing your smallness before God and your need for him as well. But I think just the final observation before we move on to our third question, just this, I always love to make these little, you know, textual connections between finding a word here, and a word there. This section begins with Moses saying, you are a stubborn people. And then if you look at that crucial verse in 10:16, circumcise the foreskins of your hearts and be no longer stubborn. Your fathers were stubborn people. I'm calling you the second generation. Don't be stubborn as they were.
Yes, they knew that the NLT doesn't...
use the word stubborn there?
It uses the word stubborn, yes. It doesn't actually tell them to circumcise the foreskins of their heart.
How does that read?
It just says, therefore, change your hearts.
Yeah, we didn't need to talk about that. I think that's an unfortunate translation, because comparing that to Exodus, or Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 6, I think it is, where circumcision of the heart language is used again, I think it's critical anticipation of the new covenant heart change that we receive now as Christians, those who are indwelt with the Spirit and have the law written on our hearts. I think that Moses was kind of beginning to introduce that concept here.
But I think it's to understand, I think that what one has to do is to understand the significance of circumcision in order to understand the significance of that.
That makes sense.
Translation. Because circumcision is a, I mean, it's a difficult concept. I mean, you sort of think to yourself, why did God have them do that? We know why he had them do it, but why was it that? You know, what was the significance?
The metaphor that's happening?
We know that it was to make the people unique and to as a sign of their submission to him. But why that?
I know. It could have been get an earring in your left ear.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Or in your put a ring on your nose or whatever. Could have been any of those things. But
would have
he
been
chose
more gender,
that.
You know.
Yeah. And it's very gender specific too. Yeah. So. Yeah.
All right. Third question. Yeah. Moses' intercession. Deuteronomy 9 tells a story of two episodes where Moses had to intercede for Israel after Israel's sin sparked God's just judgment. What does it mean to intercede on someone's behalf, as Moses did? At the heart of Moses' intercession is an insistence that Israel is still God's people. Based on what we learn from Moses' intercession, how is Israel still God's people, even when they sin?
They're still God's people, and it's very encouraging for us, because, God is not a fickle God. He doesn't make his relationship dependent upon our performance. And God has chosen his people, and he never unchooses them. In a sense, and I think that's really important for us to understand even today, that Israel is still God's chosen people.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. That's great. Yeah.
He hasn't suddenly stopped them. Now, exactly how that works through, there are all sorts of clues in Scripture, but they didn't cease to, when God said that he was going to include the Gentiles, he didn't say that I'm unchoosing the Jews and I'm suddenly choosing everybody. The Jews are still God's chosen people, and he will still treat them that way, despite the fact that they have... But it doesn't mean, what the interesting thing about that is, it doesn't mean that they have a shortcut to salvation, but they're still his chosen people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Romans 11:29, for the gifts and calling of God are irrevocable.
Yeah.
Our last question is entitled Commandments, in quotes, and you'll probably understand why. How do you react to a statement like, you have to keep all the commandments? There is perhaps no better collection of command words in Deuteronomy than in this section, specifically chapter 10, verses 12 and 13 and 20 and 21. List all the commands Moses gives in this passage. How do they give a full-orbed description of what it means to be loyal to God? So, look at 12 and 13 and 20 and 21.
Well, let me read verse 12.
That'd
to you.
Be helpful.
It said, and now, Israel, what does your God, the Lord your God, require of you? He requires only that you fear the Lord your God, that you live in a way that pleases him, you love him and serve him with all your heart and soul. And really, it's, you know, again, he's summarizing everything that we saw in the Shema.
Yeah, it's another one of those summary statements.
Yeah. Everything we saw in the Shema, everything we saw in the Ten Commandments, he summarizes all of those things. That in, if you behave like this, you will be fulfilling all the Ten Commandments. You know, you'll be fulfilling the Shema if you do these things. And so, or in, if you fulfill the Shema, you'll be doing these things. So, in a sense, he's constantly reminding them that these are the things that bring flourishing, that bring one, that bring the prospering. I continue to be reluctant to use the word prosper,
right?
Because
prosperity gospel, yeah.
Because it has so many connotations today.
Yeah, flourishing is a good alternative.
Because we can flourish without a lot of money. We can flourish with, right. You know, we can have great joy and great, and that God continues to provide. And it, actually, if we look at the times, the very few times in Israel's history when they did do what God called them to do, but the time under the leadership of Joshua really was one of those.
Yeah, Josiah, and, Hezekiah.
And then in the beginning part of Solomon's reign.
Right, that was amazing.
They were prosperous in every sense. And it's only when they stop doing these things that the wheels come off. Mm-hmm. And so God shows so clearly that these things, they're not just me trying to keep you in line. They are me explaining to you how the life that I created works best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and we see that in the whole book of Proverbs. If you want to spend 31 chapters learning that lesson, or 31, chapters, go ahead and read through that. It's the system of blessing and cursing, cause and effect, that God has written into his universe, the fabric of his universe. Well, I think next week we're going to be looking at some of those commandments then, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Beautiful. Well, we're looking forward to that challenge. And I guess we're going to see you guys next week.
As I wait,
you will.
Heart of God.